information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
Appear to border
and it
on
shows.
Fence.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Let us remember that we can do these things not just because of wealth and power, but because of who we are. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 217 of Media Monarchy. It's May 6th, 2011. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, the Obama Mayday PSYOP and an interview with Richard Grove. The wall purges wrap-up, dishing the dirt in the damn greenback dollar, night vision news purge and the girl in the polka dot dress, plus all the latest from New World Next Week, Corbett Report, Ground Zero, Peace Revolution, Food World Order, Cyberspace War, Holy Hexes, and so much more. It's May 6th, 2011, episode 217 from MediaMonarchy.com.
Just a patsy, the Oswald Italy hobby, made of my own misery, the footprints of history.
I'm just a patsy for your love.
I'm just a patsy. Manic Street Preachers from their 2007 record, Send Away the Tigers, and Manic Street Preachers, of course, no stranger to hiding socio-political messages within anthemic Brit rock. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 217th episode of Media Monarchy. It's May 6th, 2011. And my name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. The website since 9/11/05. The radio show since October 2006. Hundreds of episodes, plus interviews, videos, mixtapes, so much more. We are, of course, broadcasting live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and a huge thanks to all the affiliates who help rebroadcast and spread the word about Media Monarchy, such as ZeroPointRadio.com, simulcast live worldwide on the web on ZeroPointRadio.com, as well terrestrially in Casper, Wyoming, 92.3 FM and 1670 AM, And we also thank the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net, also simulcasting the show worldwide via the web. Perhaps at the hour two break, we'll get into and list some of our other fine affiliates. But we thank my man Jeff at radio23.org for providing extra hosting. And we also thank tragedyandhope.com, and more on that in just a second. We're, of course, on FaceSpace, Twitter, Tube, Gmail, and Skype, all with Media Monarchy, one word, as your keyword. Big thanks to our two latest and newest donors, Jay Case in California and Sabrina in Mississippi. Huge thanks for your first-time donations. Because our other donors this past week are return, repeat, fantastic supporters of Media Monarchy, like Jeff in California, Steve in Oklahoma, Samuel in Belgium, and Lisa at tragedyandhope.com. It seems as though there are a handful of folks who actually support and hit the button. And generally, I think most of us that I'm kind of connected to here in commercial-free, non-corporate alternative media, the fine folks at Corporate Report and Peace Revolution and others, there's a handful of folks that keep things rolling. But we know that there are quite literally thousands and tens of thousands of other folks out there getting the media for free, which we'll continue to do and give it out for free, because I don't have to put a dollar sign on everything. But let me implore you, if you've never taken the time, to please do it. Now, CorporateReport.com is experimenting with putting up a subscription button. For the low, low price of $1 a month, you can sign up and continually support alternative media. We may give that a shot here as well, but we'll not swap out the regular donate button that lets you fill in whatever you may like. That's all I'm going to say about that, but again, we're asking nicely. I also forget, we have a P.O. Box for Media Monarchy. Grab a pencil. It's P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon, 97212. And that, as well as pretty much all the other pertinent information, is on the front page of MediaMonarchy.com, most of it at the top right of the page. So I would implore you to check that out. And again, news tips and all those things are all completely accepted and encouraged. MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. Oh, let's glance at the breaking news right now. Obama honors Osama. Oh, wait. Obama honors Osama bin Laden's 9/11 victims at Ground Zero. Meanwhile, economy adds jobs for a third straight month, and Memphis giving door-to-door flood warnings. And just the breakdown of the trending topics on the front of Google News right now: Osama bin Laden, Paul McCartney, and the price of petroleum. That doesn't sound like some joke intro. I don't know what does. They all walk into a bar. But my friends, there is so very much that we're going to get into on this episode, and we're going to try and cram all of it in and take in all the sights from the media monarchy kingdom and do our best to do it well for you in a way, hopefully fear-free, that makes sense. And I don't want to try and do the show where I feel like you already have to be ahead to know what the hell I'm talking about. Hopefully we do things in an entry-level kind of way that isn't off-putting, and hopefully all the links are provided. I try and do a little bit of extra legwork and provide you with more subtext and context for ultimately you to do more research for yourself. We have the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. It's episode 72, Obama Ground Zero, Radioactive Playgrounds, and Canadian Selection. All those stories we're going to get into, except perhaps the Canadian Selection story. You've got to go to NewWorldNextWeek.com and check out that episode. A slew of media coming out, and perhaps inspired by some of the other folks that I'm connected to, which we'll get to in just a moment. But I'm also in Bachelor Land for the last few days and for the next couple of days. So when the cat's away, Media Monarchy will go into overdrive and put out as much new media as I possibly can for you. Second time I've appeared as part of the monthly first Wednesday of every month on what is now called The Bob Tuscan Show. It was originally theintelhub.com, still affiliated with the Intel Hub. There was just some switcheroos behind the scene, but needless to say, first Wednesday of every month, first hour of the show on oraclebroadcasting.com, I'll be a guest with Bob Tuscan, and I took the interview portion, edited it together, and put it out through the feeds. So again, if you are a subscriber, feeds.feedburner.com/mediamonarchy. And of course, that link is provided in the little RSS icon on the top right of the page. You've already gotten that in your pod catcher of choice. 2 hours after that, I was asked to be on Night Vision Radio with Renee Barnett, radio host and also director of a documentary I've seen. It was streaming on Netflix. It's not at the moment, but of course you can still get it on a disc. And it's called Bloodline. And it is about our bloodline families and the elites and the royals. And as I was watching it, who should appear as one of the interviewees and talking heads in this documentary was Tracy Twyman. So last week, you heard a short interview with Tracy Twyman explaining the necronuptials and royal rituals. And I believe that's where the connection came from. So huge thanks to Renee Barnett of Night Vision Radio for having me on for the entire hour of their show. And that one as well, I re-fed through the feeds. So if you subscribe, you've already gotten it. Episode 25 from PeaceRevolution.org, A History of Media in America. Education for your edification. The latest, greatest episode from the number one education show on Podomatic. And again, that's PeaceRevolution.org, brought to you by Richard Grove of TragedyAndHope.com and all the other fine folks within that community. And provided with every episode we post up is an invitation link for you to join the Tragedy and Hope community. But more on that topic in just a few moments. We also want to mention our other related alternative media while we're blasting through it. Episode 184 from CorbettReport.com, Lessons in Resistance, Second Republic. We all know that the Republic, let alone the constitutional monarchy, has fallen, but who's going to save it? Episode 184 talks to Adrian Salbucci of the Second Republic Movement, Second Republic theinternationalproject.com about an international movement to put the power of the government back in the hands of the people. Now, to go along with all of that are all the other related new interviews and videos that James Corbett has done. I believe he's been on a little bit of a holiday from work, so he's blasted into overdrive as well. And again, that's kind of that symbiotic relationship where you can kind of feed off of the energy of others. The Sunday Update, the injustice system, Syria to become Libya 2.0, that was on Russia Today. A full video interview with Adrian Salbucci, a full video interview with Matias Rojas on Chile and the New World Order, full interview on The Alex Jones Show concerning the Obama PSYOP, and tons of new interviews with Barry Wyatt, Max Frazier, Eric Shine, John Anthony Hill, Mark Gaffney, Dennis Rancourt, Brian Smythe. I have listened to the Mark Gaffney interview. He is the author of The 9/11 Mystery Plane. And I believe his new book coming soon is called Black 9/11. And the first couple of chapters, I believe, focus on, again, something we'll get to in just a moment. But my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org, putting up a new article every day to go along with the new 3-hour show every day on 101.1 FM KXL here in Portland, Oregon. But you can go get all those shows and listen live and find all the links on GroundZeroMedia.org. So not only following and I think breaking down quite well the Obama PSYOP, kicking the corpse one last time, the alleged death of Osama bin Laden, death's head, justice served on a tarnished platter, and then other episodes that featured interviews with Nick Redfern and Mike Lynch and other folks. All of those things are all linked up, and again, I just try and shine a light on the work that some of the other folks do that I'm proud enough to be associated with. You know, they say you should surround yourself with people smarter than you, and I think I can say I successfully have achieved that, because I ain't the smartest guy in the world. I'm just trying to figure out what's going on and trying to get more information to process to help that become some kind of knowledge and wisdom to make informed decisions about your life. And then you can spread that information with people you know and love. So, my friends, yes, I guess it shouldn't have been a surprise. We told you strange things were afoot over the course of the past weekend. And I have to say that on the April 7th episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, our third story was covering Get Osama, noting the rising chatter about this long-dead CIA asset. But then came May 1st, May Day, when officially Obama announced the death of a Bush business partner. So my main posting on MediaMonarchy.com, May Day, Obama announces death of Bush business partner, has just a little bit of the early text from CNN and tons of other updates, my friends. I'm not sure if we're going to take the time to read every headline onto the record, into the record, just to do it, because I don't know that I can make it through that entire list. And yet again, this is one of those situations where when a news story is so massive, so worldwide, that it's tough for me to go through every intricate point and try and break it all down for you here. So whether that's this Osama story, or whether it was the Japan crisis, things of that magnitude are kind of difficult for me as one guy trying to run a bunch of websites and radio and video shows to go through all of it. But needless to say, it is there for you. And I believe Monday I probably had one of my largest one-day bits of traffic to the website. And then, of course, it slowly trickled back down. But that's all right. We don't have to be huge. We know that we're making an effect in some way. We know that this information is getting out there. there are many things that I'd want to say to try and elucidate all of this and all the finer points. But I believe in some of the alternative media that I've already mentioned, I think I go into a lot of those points pretty well, actually. So on the latest New World Next Week, as well as the interview with Bob Tuscan and the interview with Renee Barnett on Night Vision Radio, going into all of the connections about this story and Robert Gates' retirement and Operation Cyclone and CIA and, of course, even other military generals saying, Osama's been dead for a long time. We killed him in the fall of 2001 in the Tora Bora offensive, if he was even alive at that point. But for whatever reason, as James Corbett said on Russia Today, the CIA is getting rid of this asset, writing him out of the story, if you will. So just as last week I wanted to go to someone who I thought would be able to shed a lot of light on the large news stories, we had Tracy Twyman on to discuss the royal wedding. So I wanted to do the same thing this week, and I was fortunate enough, because it was short notice, and it makes me appreciate it that much more. I got on the line with our old friend Richard Grove of TragedyAndHope.com and asked him if we could discuss this Osama psyop. And we did, and I think it helps explain a lot. So let's just start at the beginning. Let's start by asking, how did Richard Grove of TragedyAndHope.com not only break through this story, and it takes work. You actually have to do homework, my friends, to see this story through and to see it for what it is. But let's take it back to May Day and ask Richard Grove how he found out about the alleged death of Osama bin Laden.
Well, I noticed they did it. It was May 1st, which is a celebrated date for some people in some clubs around the world, the least of which being Oxford, which on May 1st, there's a choir that goes up on top of this building and sings to the sun as it rises because it's all based on Mithraic tradition. However, in the case of this purported death of Osama bin Laden, and I do believe he's dead, but I've believed he's been dead from the evidence I've seen for a long time. So all I knew from this, it gave me confidence that you'll never see this government or our media ever purport to have the boogeyman be this character anymore. To me, it meant his character is being retired and in such a way that they can't bring him back to life, even though this is a crazy kind of soap opera that they put out there every day in the form of theater.
But no, he's being written out of the show. He will not reappear. Even
he's pissed off the producers at some point in the last decade, and he's no longer with the show. They showed you some of his audition tapes and some other things that they doctored up, just like the Tupac still comes out with music, right, after his death. So I'm not even sure that Osama bin Laden was alive during or around the time of 9/11. But from the best sources I've seen, they've documented his death to be in December of 2001. And this was talked about on the Alex Jones Show in 2002, February.
So I guess let's just start asking the questions about this now retired character. That, who was he? Where did he come from? Or when did we first hear about him?
Well, I mean, let's cover the grammar of who is Osama bin Laden. He's one of, many dozen children of a billionaire magnate who left a company called the Saudi bin Laden Group, which is a multi-billion dollar industrial contractor that has built many, many U.S. military and political diplomatic installations around the world and has worked on many other huge building projects. So it's important to understand the context of who this character is and what type of family he came from, what type of education he had, etc. Going further with the Saudi bin Laden Group, it's purported by Boston artist Paul Loffoli that the Saudi bin Laden Group worked with the architecture company that Loffoli was working for. They worked together to design aspects of the World Trade Center. So upon hearing his video interview and seeing him talk about this many times, I find it ironic that later the child allegedly of that company and that legacy comes back to attack something, and no one ever mentions it, right? So it's not like, oh, Osama always regretted his dad being away on the business trip and wanted to tear those buildings down. You'd think they would use that if that was actually, you know, helping their story. Obviously, people knowing about Saudi Bin Laden Group and its participation in the World Trade Center construction, that wasn't playing into their story. It might lead people to too much truth. So going beyond that, you've got other aspects of his family's antics include his brother Salim Bin Laden, who was in business and funded Arbusto Energy, which was George W. Bush's first company. And they did that through a gentleman named James R. Bath, who was a longtime friend of George W. Bush. And Bath acted as the money man between the Bin Laden family and the Bush family. Now, James R. Bath is also an interesting character because if you remember the Bush AWOL document that Dan Rather got fired over, if you actually search up that document and find the document where the names aren't whited out before they whited it out after the Dan Rather fiasco, you'll see the other name on there. It was George W. Bush and James R. Bath who were AWOL. So these guys are longtime friends, and that's his connection to the Bin Laden family in the 70s in starting his company. And without the Bush corporate legacy, he could have never been president. So there's another ironic aspect of the fact that if it played into what they were trying to do to the public as far as trick them, they would have used that. They would have said, Osama always had a grudge against blah, 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 right? But they never played that, but that's factual. So it's in further investigation that you look into artists like Mark Lombardi, who made these global network diagrams that connected all these business deals with the Vatican and the Vatican Bank and the BCCI and the Franklin cover-up scandal and all these different aspects of corruptness. And he connects all the people together and tracks the money and puts them together in the form of art. And so on the cover of that book, Global Networks, you can see the art that depicts the facts. So it's an illustrated graphical representation of data that shows that the Bin Laden family and the Bush family had been in business for over 30 years at the time of 9/11.
But the public had never heard of this guy at this point in the 70s that we're talking about, and the input on the construction of the World Trade Center towers.
Well, I mean, the public did hear about Bin Laden and the Mujahideen in the 70s and 80s because that's where Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is Obama's handler, first cut his teeth in undermining the Russians in Afghanistan. So again, these common themes, Bin Laden, Afghanistan, military intelligence, people who 30 years ago, it's not like Brzezinski's a nobody, he's the handler of today's president as well. So you got to read his books and be familiar with what his game is in playing this grand chessboard. It's ultimately what piece on the chessboard is not represented? The bankers. So he's a guy who works for the bankers. And if you look at his connections to people like David Rockefeller, you know, you can start to build out more of how the strings actually pull the puppets.
Hmm.
So you've seen Bin Laden pop up in the 70s with the Mujahideen, CIA funding of what became later a database of quote-unquote terrorists that they called Al-Qaeda. And that's literally what it is. You can check the Adam, it's not Adam Curtis. Yeah, it is Adam Curtis, BBC documentary, Power of Nightmares, is it?
Uh-huh.
Wherein they detail that in order to trick a jury in January of 2001, that they actually conglomerated what they called Al-Qaeda by pulling a bunch of files together to present in this case. And from there, they could make a good argument that this terrorist group was behind whatever they wanted. 9/11 happening 9 months later. But if we go into the 90s, there's a very interesting document from 1998 published by the Council on Foreign Relations in the form of their Foreign Affairs Journal. It's from November, December 1998. And one of the articles is by Bernard Lewis, who explains Osama bin Laden. So I thought that'd be interesting. And in the same you're going to, like, let me catch my breath for a second. All right. So Bernard Lewis's article is called Licensed to Kill, and it specifically names and promotes Osama bin Laden as this up-and-coming terrorist and how he has this declaration of the World Islamic Front for Jihad against the Jews and the Crusaders, end quote. right? So it's a big propaganda piece. And if you look up Bernard Lewis and you see what his role has been in his life, so do the grammar of Bernard Lewis, see where he was educated, see who created the Princeton school where he was educated, and then you can start to see it's the same school that brought us people like Woodrow Wilson and the PhD system from Prussia. And so when you understand who the authors of these documents are in 1998, scaring us about Osama bin Laden, then you can start to see the common membership of these authors to clubs, one of which being the Council on Foreign Relations. The second article is by two notorious characters, John Deutsch, who was ex-MIT and ex-CIA, actually he was current CIA at the time, Director of Intelligence, and he also had connections to banks that were involved with 9/11 insider trading. The other article, the other author of the article is Philip Zelikow, who at that time had been a co-author with Condoleezza Rice on a book about Germany's rebuilding after World War II. And after writing this article a few years later, he became the executive director of the 9/11 Commission. Now, if you let me browse through this article, and I'm just going to read words that I've highlighted, it'll kind of give you an idea of what they're trying to create between these two articles. The first one specifically mentioning Osama bin Laden and that he's out to get the Jews, quote unquote. That's the quote that they're quoting bin Laden, right? That he has his declaration against the Jews and the colonists. In this article on catastrophic terrorism by Deutsch and Zelikow, they talk about, quote, weapons of mass destruction, the legacy of Hollywood and Tom Clancy and nightmarish scenarios, the World Trade Center, five lines below that, like Pearl Harbor, this event would divide our past and future into a before and after. On the next page, oh, by the way, Ashton Carter is the third author on the article. He's from the Ford Foundation. John Deutsch is an MIT professor and director of Central Intelligence and deputy director of defense. Philip Zelikow is a former member of the National Security Staff and also the co-author on that Condoleezza Rice book.
Folks may also remember John Deutsch, I believe, squirming under the confrontation and accusations of Mike Rupert.
Right, right. And so, let's go another couple pages into the article because it's quite a verbose article. I wouldn't attempt to summarize it. It does talk about the RAND Corporation and their participation in this. Again, uses the term weapons of mass destruction and curiously mentions the Federal Emergency Management Agency would organize consequence management under a federal response plan. This present structure is adequate for ordinary terrorist threats or attacks or even small scares involving weapons of mass destruction. Well, clearly, FEMA was even there the day before 9/11, and they couldn't do anything about it. So I'm going to, you know, we could talk a whole episode about that paragraph. Mm-hmm. Again, mentions crisis management for catastrophic terrorism. Well, what is L. Paul Bremer's job at Marsh & McLennan? Oh, he was risk management. Crisis management. That's ironic, because his company gets taken down in 9/11, and then he becomes the new dictator over Iraq after they get rid of Iraqi law and before they instill U.S. law. He's there in a gray zone of just piracy where there's hundreds of billions of dollars that went missing.
That's the pallets of cash floating around there.
Right. L. Paul Bremer, he came from Marsh & McLennan. He was CEO of risk management. So I'm just going to go to the last paragraph in this article called Overcoming Disbelief. Catastrophic terrorism poses an imminent threat to America's future. But the United States can fight back only if it sets the right goals. In 1940 and 1941, the U.S. government pondered what kind of forces it would need to wage a global war. The answers went on far beyond the imagination of the wry smiles and shaking heads in Washington offices greeted the planning papers as if they made their rounds. The Cold War saw similar patterns of disbelief. The notion of an intelligence system founded on photographic surveillance from the upper atmosphere or outer space seemed outrageously far-fetched in 1954 when the U-2 program was born. The films and cameras alone seemed an overwhelming hurdle. A few years later, U-2s were flying. Six years later, satellites were in place. Similar stories could be told about the remarkable history of intercontinental missile guidance and how we shared it with the Soviets, or the fast deployment of more than 500,000 troops and thousands of armored vehicles of the Persian Gulf in 1991 and 1992. Now, the context of this is what would it take to wage a global war? And the last sentence is, America can meet new challenges, but first, it must imagine success. Only then can it organize itself and attain it. And so the whole article is saying, if you guys want this, you're going to have to organize a good story and attain it, like Pearl Harbor, using the World Trade Center. And, oh, there's, you know, three stories before. There's this guy, Osama bin Laden, that says licensed to kill because he has a declaration against the Jews and Crusaders. So it seems like a perfect story. This is 1998.
And they publish it. And that it's in a way, it's as giving the pieces. It's like, here are all these parts. Here's bin Laden. Here's crisis management. Here's WMD. Here's the World Trade Center. Here's anti-Semites. Here's how you...
By the way, that's very interesting because when I looked up Bernard Lewis, he's actually written on anti-Semitism and the Holocaust and things like this. And he's written and done so in a propagandized manner, as was his training by the Roundtable people. The same people that created Princeton's Institute for Advanced Study are the same Roundtable people that control Oxford through All Souls College. This is all Cecil Rhodes' legacy, and it's still incarnate in the form of the De Beers Diamond Cartel, which basically runs MI6 and CIA and Mossad.
So to take it back to these articles from 98 that sort of began the narrative and all the sort of pieces were there and they were just...
It began the narrative, and in the first paragraph it mentions Hollywood and Tom Clancy. So let's talk about Jack Ryan. What role does Jack Ryan play in all of this?
I can't say that I've ever watched, you know, any of those films or read any of those books, but when you say Jack Ryan to me, it instantly makes me think of
Harrison Ford. Or Ben Affleck played Jack Ryan in one of the movies, I think, right? So there's a lot of Clancy movies or Clancy books that have been made into movies. There's video games, Tom Clancy, all these different things, right? I haven't read the books. I have seen most of the movies. I know who the Jack Ryan character personifies in my mind, right? It's supposed to be this guy who believes in America and he's got integrity and he's going to do the right thing, even if it's a, you know, tough road to hoe, you know, that sort of thing. And so that whole character of Jack Ryan is based on this real-life Dr. Steve Pachenik. And this guy has worked for Nixon, and he's been with Kissinger and Ford and Carter. And all the way up through, he still consults for the Department of Defense. And I didn't know anything about this guy, really. I had heard Alex Jones mention that he had interviewed him back in 2002. I'd never heard the interview, and I know Alex was having trouble finding the audio file because it's been so long ago. I mean, you know, it's thousands of shows ago for him, right? So I woke up this morning, my Skype went beep, which means I got a message while I was offline, right? And it's Paul Verge, and he's got this Google link, and he's like, holy shit. So I was like, all right, I'm going to click that. So I click it, and it's a 2010 annual Council on Foreign Relations roster. And here's this guy, Stephen R. Pachenik. So I was like, all right, well, who is he? So I started to Google because I don't know who he is yet. And so I see Alex Jones just did an interview with him yesterday. And I was like, all right, I'm putting two and two together here. I'm going to say that's the guy he was looking for. So I start to listen to the interview. And I started wikiing and seeing who Pachenik was, where he's worked, and see if what he's saying is valid. So I'm taking notes and I'm comparing to the other things that I've already validated. And most of what he says checks out.
It's a great pleasure and an honor. I want to thank you, Alex. I want to thank what you said. I think very much of what you said is very accurate. I will correct some of the issues that I think we've talked about. But I want to thank your audience for listening. I want to say how important Alex Jones was after 9/11, when I knew very well at that time that the American public was being deceived and was being treated as if we were fools, stupid, ignorant, and cheats. I had hoped at that time, once I was on the Alex Jones show, and I broke ranks with my people at the Council on Foreign Relations. I'm a member also of the Association of Former Intelligence Officers, the National Military Intelligence Association, and I volunteer repeatedly. I volunteered to still work with our military because, number one, I respect our military. Number two, we have sent men and women to wars which have not been clearly defined by civilians who have never been in war, including Clinton, including Bush Jr. in particular, who precipitated the wars into Iraq and Afghanistan, and now Obama. And I had hoped by that time in the past that we would have stopped fooling the American public and stopped creating an incursion into our own country, killing our own people. 9/11 has still not been fully explained, and it is not a conspiracy theory. It has nothing to do with all kinds of secrecy and cabal and any other issue. It has to do with a famous technique in warfare that we call stand down, false flag, deception, and denial. It was done during Pearl Harbor. Alex explained to you yesterday it was done by Hitler. It was done by LBJ during the war in Vietnam, where we had the Gulf of Tonkin, and he claimed that we had a false flag operation and we had to shoot the Vietnamese because they shot it. That was wrong. Many men died for that. Many men went to war, and at the same time, we had a stand down and a false flag, which was told to me repeatedly by the people I worked with, including a very famous general that I will not repeat his name, to protect him until I go to a grand jury. Now, what I'm saying today is very important. I was a deputy assistant secretary under Nixon, Ford, and came under special and Carter. I resigned under Carter because I disagreed with the way he handled the hostage situation. I came back under Reagan to take down the Soviet Union, and I came back under Bush Sr. to work on Cambodia. I'm not a career foreign service. I'm not a career intelligence officer. I am what every American is. I'm a physician, but I'm an entrepreneur. I create businesses, and I believe in the American way of life, which is very simple. The hope, the faith, the dedication, and the lack of interference in my job, in my pocketbook, and in my speech and in the ability to say what I want to say by the government. That doesn't mean I'm a Tea Party member, I'm a liberal, or I'm a conservative, or I belong to any party. I am strictly an American, and I'm saying this to you as Americans. We have once again been deceived. I thought this would cease and desist by the time Bush Jr. was elected and thrown out. I had asked that Bush Jr. be indicted for war criminals, Cheney be indicted, Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, Steve Hadley. It goes on and on and on. The issue now is we have brought to the forefront at a time when America is in deep peril economically, as Alex Jones has correctly explained to you. We are in deep peril because we are in two wars of which I have no idea why we're there. And I had warned even on the Alex Jones show 9 years ago, not we will go into Afghanistan and Iraq after the 9/11. And I predicted, and he was correct, Alex Jones, and you see it on your website, that Osama bin Laden would be dead and had been dead for over 7 months. Not because special forces killed him, but because as a physician I had known that the CIA physicians had treated him, and it was on the intelligence roster that he had Marfan syndrome. Now, many of you can look up on the internet Marfan syndrome. It's a disease which is a genetic abnormality which Abraham Lincoln had, and it was the disease of the cataract of the eyes, of the coronary arteries, and what happens in that disease is that you have a very short lifespan. The fact that he had renal dialysis was not an issue of renal stones, which can be cured, and is not that serious or life-threatening. But he needed that dialysis machine, so he had to take it with him. It was not an accident that his number two man, El-Zawahiri, was a physician. It is not an accident that most leaders of terrorist organizations around the world are physicians. That's why I know them, because we understand our code of ethics and creed. Osama bin Laden died when we went into Afghanistan. General Tommy Franks had stated very clearly that he had died, and he made a slip. Now, we knew he had already died. By that time, by the time we had already gone into Afghanistan, and in Pakistan, we knew he was dead. So the notion, when I came on the radio show in 2002 with Alex Jones, I said, listen, Osama bin Laden's dead. He's dead. There's no question about it. He had Marfan syndrome. It had nothing to do with special forces. He was used in the same way that 9/11 was used to mobilize the emotions and feelings of the American people in order to go to a war that had to be justified through a narrative that Bush Jr. created and Cheney created about the world of war terrorism. Now, I have been in that world for 30 years. During 30 years, we had never been attacked in America. I repeat it again. The question is not that we are safer now. We are we're not safer. The issue is we had never been attacked up to 9/11 because Bush Jr., Cheney, Rumsfeld, and a group of other generals who involved, who I know who they are, and they know who I am. We decided that we had to mobilize the public in order to create a war on terrorism, which is an oxymoron. That war on terrorism no longer exists. We went into Iraq. Our military forces, and I have to tell you, I have the greatest respect for our military men, and I'm saying this to you, the generals, the colonels, the majors, and the captains, and I've been lecturing at the War College every year. Be careful of the orders you receive from civilian presidents. I say it again, and listen to me. Be aware of the orders that you receive from civilian presidents like Bush, Clinton, and Obama, particularly presidents who have never served in a war and do not know what the consequences of the war and the number of men and women who die bravely for our country and our cause because some civilian has to manipulate his political career at the expense of the American public and at the expense of the bodies and the blood and guts of our warriors who are so important to us.
And most of what he says checks out. There's some limitations. So I'll say, like, he might be 90% honest and holding 10% back. And that 10% is substantial in the light of the other 90%, but the 90% he's talking about is valid from many perspectives that are independent of what he's saying. So I was like listening very intently and paying close attention and understanding that the character of Jack Ryan that Tom Clancy writes is based on this guy. I was like, wow. In juxtaposition to the Foreign Affairs article calling for basically a Tom Clancy-like story to put this Osama bin Laden character in a juxtaposition so that America can start a global war using the World Trade Center.
There you have it, my friends. That's probably only just half of my interview with Richard Grove of PeaceRevolution.org and TragedyAndHope.com, and one of us is probably going to put out the entire version of that, but so many things going on, we'll have to figure that out in just a little bit. But again, stay tuned. There's no way, as I noted, that I can read through all of our related headlines and just the massive data collection posted up for you on MediaMonarchy.com concerning this Osama PSYOP. But needless to say, let's jump down to the very bottom that'll give you the most recent updates that I have. Feds issue train warning based on info uncovered at Bin Laden compound, and we'll return to that in our police state updates a little later in the show. And as we discussed on NewWorldNextWeek.com, Obama to Ground Zero, completing the rituals. Witnesses say man may have pulled gun on Obama motorcade, or as Obama motorcade passed near Ground Zero, and there is some video of that. Our most recent update posted up concerning this massive story from the Deutsche Press Agency, urgent, Al-Qaeda confirms bin Laden's death. Well, there you go. There's just yet another bit of confirmation. So as I said, I'm not going to read all these headlines into the record, but as we were just discussing over in the chat room on ZeroPointRadio.com, the entire show notes are always embedded in every episode. So whatever podcatcher you get it through, if you look under the lyrics tab, the entire show notes will be in there. Every story cited will be listed, as well as the music that we use as our music beds. That's also in there because I'm a radio guy and kind of OCD, I have to include all of that stuff. So it'll always be in the show notes. You can even just read it more simply over on the archive.org listings, which again, it's all linked up for you. Let's now move to holyhexes.com, the latest site in the Media Monarchy Kingdom, but continuing the story as we kind of clean it up. But of course, it will continue to pop up throughout this episode. Dalai Lama suggests Osama's death was justified. From the Los Angeles Times, he appeared to suggest that the U.S. was justified in killing Osama bin Laden, saying, quote, "Forgiveness doesn't mean forget what happened. If something is serious, and it is necessary to take countermeasures, you have to take countermeasures." We'll get our other posts on Holy Hexes while we're here, and on April 30th, we had posted up about pilgrims gathering in Rome.
for the papal beatification, where they exhumed the body of a cult leader who presided over the cover-up of worldwide child abuse. And we all celebrate. Meanwhile, on a lighter note, Book of Mormon leads Tony Award nominations. Tony Awards are the theater awards. And the Book of Mormon is the show you may recall from the South Park Boys. We've reported on this story a couple of times in the past on HolyHexes.com, and I believe we include the flashback to March of this year as the Book of Mormon was opening on Broadway. So hopefully it's at least as scathing and informative as how South Park exposed Scientology on the show with the little text under it that said, this is really what they believe. But finally on Holy Hexes, we'll get all our Walpurgis wrap-up, Walpurgis being just one of the occult holidays over the past weekend. And this is all posted up as the 5-5 Pop Occulture Walpurgis wrap-up, Royal Families and the New World Order. That's an article from Press TV. And our photo that we have to go along with this, and you may or may not have seen anything about this, and I go into it a bit in the interview and talk recently with Bob Tuscan. The strange little girl next to them, covering her ears. A rather homely child, and some have speculated that her features could suggest inbreeding. And of course, these are the inbreeding, eugenics-obsessed elite. She's there at, you know, cousins getting married. And she also has weird scratches and cuts on her wrists. But let's blast through all our other related updates. And a thanks to Steve in London for helping out on HolyHexes.com. 8 things Kate don't know about royalty. That's from Don't Tread on Me. Sales skyrocket for a little-known fragrance that Kate wore. There was a plan in place in case she ran away. And there's more you can read about the queen and the weird nuns and the strange 8-level royal cake with weird secret symbolic meanings to the sugar paste flower decorations. But to break it down, you can watch a 4-part YouTube clip of the one and only Webster Tarpley of Tarpley.net breaking down the origins of the House of Windsor and their thirst for ultimate power. Meanwhile, Prince Charles visited the District of Criminals. You know, he had to come to town for a sustainability conference, pushing the overpopulation, anthropogenic global warming myth that, of course, the Club of Rome said in their white paper, First Global Revolution, that a phony environmental crisis would fit the bill to unite humanity against humanity. Toxic Zamzam holy water from Mecca is being sold to Muslims in UK shops. So yes, fake holy water. And yes, Pope John Paul II, his body was exhumed. They showed his blood for everyone. Just in case you had any doubts about this last weekend's occult actions. Canadian bishop pleads guilty to child porn. Surprise, surprise. That is from BeliefNet. Meanwhile, Antichrist to come from America, warns Christian scholar. That's on GodDiscussion.com, and the bit that I do know about eschatology says, I don't think that's right. Doomsday approaches. That's from the Washington Post. The San Francisco Weekly getting into deciphering those Judgment Day billboards. That's right, my friends. I hope your iCal is marked for, remember, May 21st. That's when they say the rapture's coming. And appropriately enough, I did get in on disc Left Behind, the movie. But I haven't watched it yet. But our last note on this Holy Hexes, Pop Culture, Walpurgis wrap-up. Could September be the month of the rapture? And this came via a listener. And unfortunately, folks, as I try and include more references to the things that listeners send me, such as while I'm thinking of it, someone helpfully, thankfully, sent me the correction last week when I was discussing the attack on the Dutch royal family and Cleopatra's Needle and the obelisks. That actually happened in the Netherlands, not in London, as I mistakenly said. But someone made a reference to, we discussed Comet Elenin last week over on cyberspacewar.com. And there are some interesting dates that line up, and that's what we were talking about. And someone said September could be an interesting time. So I tried to Google that up, and AboveTopSecret.com has a post with the question, could September be the month of the rapture? Well, I guess if the guys don't get it right on May 21st, you know, they can try again in September. So speaking of cyberspacewar.com, we will move there and go over all the latest news from inner and outer space, and we'll begin with the May 5th DEF CON news purge reentry and removal. And first, the reentry. And I heard this as breaking news while listening to Clyde Lewis the other night on groundzeromedia.org. Spacecraft reentry over Washington and Oregon on May 3rd, question mark. And you can see the strange video that quite plainly shows something going through the skies. And we link up the video from someone called Dutch Sense, who I believe we've referenced here before. They have a YouTube channel and they track radar, satellites, weather, NASA, space, all of that. They were quite correct in predicting that some catastrophic Earth event was going to happen on 3/11, even saying probably an earthquake. So they just look at the data and are able to fairly accurately predict what's going on. And it's not insane speculation and conspiracy theory. It's obviously done by someone who knows what they're doing. So the video is there for you to watch so you can see the streak go through the sky. The story seems to be, my friends, that UFO, meaning it was an unidentified flying object, was most likely a clandestine military test coming out of Alaska. And I've seen massive plane and jet traffic over the city. They've rerouted the traffic for the summer over the city even more, so you see all the jets flying overhead. I've noticed them laying down the trails, and then suddenly, oh, it's all crappy and overcast again a little while later. But let's not speculate about chemtrails, because, of course, you know, that doesn't exist. They're not actually geoengineering the atmosphere. They're not spraying aluminum and barium, which just happens to be the way you would see the skies to be able to use holographic projections. But let's not go down that road. They mentioned it on our local news. The weather guy said, oh, yeah, and there's some military tests, and they're spraying some chaff. It's about radar deflection. Sure it is. Meanwhile, Slashdot.org reporting on the Justice Department, and you can download the PDF of the report where they note that the FBI is too focused on child pornography, that ultimate boogeyman of the internet, that ultimate excuse to lay the smackdown as if it's an all-pervasive problem. No, it's the great key to be able to get into greater crackdowns on the web. And just as in many other ways, as we've reported before, such as, you know, the guy on the anti-drug task force gets arrested for drugs, or the, you know, sobriety guy gets busted for drunk driving, we see that the priests and the cops continually get busted for child pornography on their computer, or the TSA guy that we reported on last week, I believe. So you can see the people who get into positions of power. What about Mark Foley on the Protect the Children Committee? Meanwhile, feds demand Firefox remove add-on that redirects seized domains. That is from Threat Level. In the update from DSLReports.com, Mozilla refuses to block extension for Homeland Security as the government's ICE effort continues to look silly as they're shutting down domains for banking, or rather gambling sites and sports streaming sites. Of course, they'll knock down all the gambling sites so they can put up their own gambling sites, showing you pretty plainly that they are gangsters and that this is a shell game and it's fixed and they're rigging it to where the house is going to win. The smartest move, what do they say at the end of War Games? It looks like the smartest move isn't to not play. We provide you with the flashback to just a few weeks ago where we reported on Mafia Fire, the Firefox add-on to reverse U.S. government domain censorship. So good on Mozilla for turning down the Department of Reichland Security. Let's hope they keep it up. And our last note on this DEF CON, Gabriel Giffords leaves Florida after shuttle Endeavor delay. That would have just been too many occult activities, perhaps, if they would have actually launched the shuttle last Friday, the 29th, as we were broadcasting live for you here, during the royal rituals. It was delayed for whatever reason. My wager is they're going to go for it on 5/11 this coming Wednesday. So we have the stories concerning the Endeavor launch, and I'll spare you. We've gone into the details about the occult origins of the space program and have noted that it is a Colombian enterprise to Endeavor for the discovery of Atlantis, and all challengers will be destroyed. SBX, HARP at Sea. We're going to get into some of the articles posted up on cyberspacewar.com from my man Alan in Omaha, the main writer and editor over at cyberspacewar.com, and I'll put out the call yet again. If you've got the know-how, if you've got the passion, and you want to help out on the Media Monarchy Kingdom, please, I could use your help. MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. Some web savvy would be helpful. HARP at Sea, that's the Sea-based X-band radar, SBX. And you can go to Nick Begich, and you can also go to a recent article from Jack Blood on his DeadlineLive.info website, speculating, again, that HARP facility in Alaska, of course, has gained lots of notoriety as a possible offensive weapon. But the SBX is getting more attention as a seafaring platform that can do basically the same thing, except it's mobile. And does this connect to Japan? Question mark. We also have Zeus attack kits, a steal for cyber criminals. Zeus attack kits are filling a niche in the best spirit of capitalism and with as much moral perspective. Attack or exploit kits are there as known, and the industry are growing more prevalent. You too can become a cyber criminal without the technical expertise or time dedicated to build your own exploit. Symantec, the internet security firm and maker of the Norton antivirus software, issued a threat report on the proliferation of this cybercrime. Symantec TV also provides an eye-opening video called Attack Toolkits in 90 Seconds. An article from news.com.au out of Australia surveys the threat posed by attack kits. The Zeus attack kit sells for $700. We return to Lauren Moray, reveals yet again more shockers, this time concerning Google. And of course, it's not a shocker. But it connects the Human Genome Project and NASA facility and DNA surveys. And of course, we also provide a little link with Bertrand Russell explaining it all for you. We reported last week on the smartphone scandal. As of course, yeah, again, surprise, surprise, your iPhone and Android and Microsoft Windows Phone are all spying on you with impunity, but you're not going to do anything about it. But Tom Burkhart, writing for Anti-Fascist Calling, writes that as the smartphone scandal grows, tech firms run for cover, of course, all the while reaping windfall profits. Recent revelations that Apple's iPhone and iPad, Google's Android, and Microsoft's Windows Phone 7 operating systems collect, store, and transmit records of users' physical locations to central databases, secretly and without consent, have ignited a firestorm over Americans' privacy rights in an age of hyper-surveillance. And with a lawsuit filed last week in a U.S. District Court in Florida by two iPhone users, as theregister.co.uk reports, Apple guru Steve Jobs was forced to respond to complaints after the firm's usual tactic, deafening silence, failed to assuage customers' anxieties. The lawsuit alleges that, quote, irreparable injury has resulted and continues to result from Apple's unauthorized tracking of millions of Americans, end quote. Our related video goes to Raw Replay, where Julian Assange calls Facebook the most appalling spy machine ever. Meanwhile, FBI tracking suspects online. A FOIA request made in 2007 by EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, reveals the FBI using secret spyware. A recent article at Raw Story shows, quote, that software called the Computer and Internet Protocol Address Verifier, CIPAV, was used by the FBI since at least 2001. The software allows the FBI to collect a variety of information from a computer every time it connects to the Internet, including the IP address, the MAC address, open communication ports, the list of programs running, URLs visited, and more. It is unclear how the FBI installs the software on a computer, but is suspected that the spyware exploits a vulnerability in the user's browser, like other common internet viruses. However, the article notes a greater threat posed by a recent FBI proposal. In February, the FBI urged members of the House Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security to update the Communications Assistance to Law Enforcement Act, CALEA, and make it easier for authorities to eavesdrop on the Internet. CALEA is the same 1994 law that the U.S. administration was not observing just prior to the Iraq War. See CorbettReport.com for more on CALEA. You can listen to Isaac Asimov's Foundation Trilogy in MP3 audio from sffaudio.com. It's a 1973 BBC 3 radio adaptation of Asimov's Foundation Trilogy. I believe it was, if not last week, the week before, we noted some old-time radio concerning X-1, and I'm a huge old-time radio fan. Here's a nerdy moment. I joined the sci-fi book club in high school to mostly get hardcover editions of some DC graphic novels from Sandman. They had sweet hardcover editions that were a much cheaper price. Think of it as like Columbia House for sci-fi nerds. But of course, I had to buy other things to complete my agreement, and one of the things I got on tape, and I believe we played it way, way, way back in the single-digit episodes of Media Monarchy when we didn't have a whole lot of content. Is it 1955? Again, Columbia Broadcasting System. Radio play of Brave New World that was narrated by Aldous Huxley and had live scoring from Bernard Herrmann. So that blows my mind. All right, that nerd moment's over. We also have the Voyager adventure in 3 minutes. A wonderful 3-minute NASA video provides the story of the Voyager spacecraft, launched in 97. And you can read more on Universe Today and the Voyager Golden Record and more at NASA. And our last note on cyberspacewar.com, are decay rates of radioactive elements changing? An axiom of physics seems to have smashed against the hard wall of reality. Ernest Rutherford, father of nuclear physics, made the observation in 1930. A radioactive substance follows a fixed exponential decay, but new evidence runs counter to this physical law. In a recent Discovery News article, Purdue researchers have noted decay rates that vary with the sun's 33-day rotation. The article asks whether sun emitting a new particle that may be altering the decay rates. The Purdue researchers note also an annual variance which correlates with the Earth's distance from the sun in a 2008 article. To summarize, what we're showing is that the decay constant is not really a constant. This emerging story will be interesting to see how physics establishment reacts to challenging a basic tenet. It may be the case radioactive decay rates have always varied to subtle degrees, and we just haven't noticed. So as we close up Cyberspace War, I again throw out a huge thanks to Alan in Omaha for doing such great work on cyberspacewar.com. So we're discussing radiation, but we'll move back to the main site, MediaMonarchy.com, for the second story we cover on the most recent New World Next Week from The Guardian. Fukushima parents dish the dirt in protest over radiation levels. Essentially, angry parents scooped up the radioactive dirt from the playground and took it to Parliament and dumped it and put a Geiger counter over it and showed that it's way over the levels, even the new levels that they're raising everything to, just as they raised our radioactive levels that are supposedly now okay for us here in the States. Again, as if human physiology has changed, but maybe that article we just went through on Cyberspace War shows maybe things are changing. Yeah. I also note this story reminds me of where we get the name Holy Hexes from, and that would be from Reverend Billy and his band of street preacher, street theater activists when they were dumping the murdered mud from West Virginia mountaintop removal sites and dumping it in J.P. Morgan branches due to their involvement in mountaintop removal. So posted below this story, which again we go into on New World Next Week, so I'm not going to go through the text all again, and it's all laid out for you and all linked up for you. We have our related BioWars EnviroHealth updates. While you were distracted by Osama's corpse, the Fukushima disaster continues. Radiation levels keep rising in the Pacific. That's from Press TV and from Washington'sBlog.com. The EPA stopping daily monitoring of radioactivity right when we need it more than ever. And on around the country, massive flooding extends across the American South and Midwest. That's from CNN. Meanwhile, from TimesFreePress.com, nuclear sirens conk out in a storm. This puts the lie to the whole Homeland Security overlay, the idea that we can always be safe, that everything can always be taken care of, that all these measures can be put into place and everything will work out. But we always note, somehow, miraculously, just when you need them, the cameras don't work, or the announcements don't work, or the radios don't work, coincidentally. So this article gets into what didn't work in the recent deadly wave of weather wars in the American South. And it again, as so many things do, remind me of The Simpsons when they're unveiling the new nuclear status sign that shows you the different levels of, you know, minor radiation leak, roll up your windows, or complete meltdown, run for your lives. And they laugh and note, if there's a complete meltdown, there won't be the power to power that sign. But the recent tornadoes are the most in U.S. history and made April 27th the deadliest day in America in 86 years. Meanwhile, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers moved 265 tons of explosives into position. That's right. You can get more on that from waronyou.com. And for the update from Cryptogon and the Intel Hub, Army Corps detonates explosives on flood levee as the first level breached in Bird's Point by Army Corps of Engineers in their New Madrid seismic zone. That's right. A massive military drill concerning floods and levees. And again, it's always got to be an environmental story. That's the new paradigm that we're in, that we've gone over for you so many times now. That even when it's the military, it's still about the bio wars. So God knows what's going down in and on the New Madrid fault line as they're setting off 265 tons of explosives in, you know, just a military exercise. Meanwhile, tritium pumped from a nuclear plant into the Mississippi River. Perhaps, you know, it felt a little lonesome and jealous of all the great action that the Gulf of Mexico and the Pacific Ocean is getting. Now the Mississippi River gets its own little bit, and then, of course, it'll dump in to the Gulf. Meanwhile, my neighbor to the north, as we again note what surrounds all of our weather issues that happen on Earth and are happening out in space, we see it in our animals first. In Washington State, just to the north of me here in Portland, Oregon, another dead gray whale washes ashore in less than a week after the other one.
Another dead whale is beached in Grays Harbor County. Aaron Glantz sent us this picture of the whale overnight. This is just south of the Damon Road Beach approach in Ocean Shores. The exact cause of death is still unclear. Another gray whale washed ashore just last week near Pacific Beach.
And our last note. Under Fukushima parents dish the dirt in protest over radiation levels, where we're going over all our other related bio-wars and viro-health updates. Omen? Question mark. Scientists dismayed as millions of aquatic animals swarm the Antarctica. You may recall we covered this story for you last week as millions of king crabs are swarming Antarctica. Why would you go there? Unless you're running from something. So, speaking of crab, we'll move to Food World Order, and we have a few posts over on that site as well. Again, so many sites within the kingdom. And we'll begin with the binge and purge there as well. New rules, new secrets, new order. FDA claims the power to seize food without even any kind of evidence of contamination. That's from Food Freedom and the link where you can just read the new FDA rules for yourself. Meanwhile, the dirty secret GMO companies don't want you to know. That is from Mercola, and I believe it concerns the fact that even most mainstream outlets note that most of the food that's GMO, you shouldn't eat. Grape tomatoes recalled due to salmonella risk. World food prices rise to near record high as inflation speeds up, or so says the United Nations. That's from Bloomberg. And we close with farmwars.info. And you may recall last year we talked to Barbara Peterson of farmwars.info. She posted up a short documentary called Planet for Sale, The New World Agricultural Order. Furthermore, on foodworldorder.com, Sibelius-backed biotech firm reorganizing under criminal probe. The head of Health and Human Services not only denies that Americans have a right to bodily health and food of their choice, but Kathleen Sibelius is hell-bent on spending taxpayer money to promote genetically modified food and drugs. One of her projects, the Kansas Bioscience Authority, a publicly funded venture enterprise developed to promote biotechnology, is currently under criminal investigation. CEO Tom Thornton has resigned. Kansas Bioscience Authority also lobbied the Department of Homeland Security for the highly controversial bioweapons and cattle disease lab in the state, along with former governor, now Obama's cabinet secretary. Under her governorship and full support, the Kansas Economic Growth Act of 2004 passed, funding KBA, the Kansas Bioscience Authority, with $581 million in tax revenue to develop a bioscience industry in Kansas. This highly controversial bioweapons and cattle disease lab, this is the proposed movement of the Plum Island Biolab to Kansas. So, you know, having the place where Lyme disease and other things were essentially created, they don't want to have it, you know, all the way on the New England coast up there. They want to move it to the center of the country. So, you know, when they have a controlled release of some man-made engineered bioweapon that will have very little way to fight against, of course, they'll create the antidote to it as well. But it'll get out during some military operation. It was a drill. Whoops. Meanwhile, Colorado may join the cottage foods movement. Farmers who want to prepare and sell foods at home hope the Colorado legislature joins more than a dozen other states with a cottage foods designation. It's a sort of in-between step between giving away homemade foods to neighbors and going commercial, which requires government oversight. Some farmers say isn't worth navigating just to sell small batches of food. We want to find a way to support what's been growing in Colorado, said State Senator Gail Schwartz, who sponsored a cottage food bill earlier this year. The cottage food idea has big fans in local food advocates, small farmers, and rural development experts who say the change could boost rural economies and help people get started in the food business. And we have links to that bill and links to Schwartz's website and more on cottage foods. Our last few posts on Food World Order are quick ones, and it was, I guess, in a way, something I experimented with as I'm trying to figure out more efficient ways to run the media monarchy kingdom. I always end up spending a lot of time in drafting and crafting of the posts because, again, referring to my OCD nature, I always want them to look perfect and have the precise amount of information and be checked and triple-checked. But then sometimes the site stays dormant and doesn't have new posts as often as it should. So I tried to blast out just a bunch of quick posts to Food World Order, and perhaps we're going to see that more and more if I can just kind of relinquish some of the obsessive perfectionism. The Bittersweet Wars, Battle Pits Cocoa Speculators versus Chocolate Makers from Der Spiegel. Food commodities from wheat to rice to soybeans have become objects of speculation. While cocoa speculators are threatening the survival of some of Germany's oldest chocolate makers, entrepreneurs in Ghana are trying to give farmers a larger share of the profits. Meanwhile, from allgov.com, contaminated food costs the U.S. more than $14 billion a year. Foodborne illnesses are costing the U.S. $14 billion a year in terms of medical care, lost days at work, long-term chronic health problems, or deaths. This, according to a report with the PDF link provided to you by the Emerging Pathogens Institute at the University of Florida. More than 90% of this cost is caused by just five pathogens, the big five, Salmonella, Campylobacter, Listeria, Toxoplasma gondii, and norovirus. Inky, Binky, Pinky, and Clyde. Meanwhile, feds sting Amish farmers selling raw milk locally. Those dastardly Amish. After a year-long sting operation, including aliases, a 5 a.m. surprise inspection, and surreptitious purchases from an Amish farm in Pennsylvania, it all culminated in the federal government announcing this week that it has gone to court to stop the evil Rainbow Acres Farm from selling its contraband to willing customers in the Washington area. That product in question, unpasteurized milk. Finally, on foodworldorder.com, which will set the stage quite nicely for us to transition to our EconoCrash updates, from Bloomberg, McDonald's hires 62,000 people for minimum wage part-time jobs and turns away 938,000 other applicants. The McDonald's Corporation, the world's biggest restaurant chain, said it hired 24% more people than planned during an employment event earlier this month. McDonald's and its franchises hired 62,000 people in the U.S. after receiving more than a million applications, the Oak Brook, Illinois-based company said in an emailed statement. Previously, it said it planned to hire 50,000, and I believe we reported that for you, that they were going to go on a big job hiring blitz. The 419 National Hiring Day was the company's first, says Dania Proud, a McDonald's spokeswoman. She declined to disclose how many of the jobs were full versus part-time. McDonald's employed 400,000 workers worldwide at company-owned stores at the end of 2010, according to a company filing. The number of applications for unemployment benefits in the U.S. rose last week, a sign that progress in the labor market may be fading. Jobless claims increased by 25,000 to 429,000 in the week that ended April 23rd, the most in 3 months, that according to data from the Labor Department in the District of Criminals. As we turn back to MediaMonarchy.com for our EconoCrash news, The Wall Street Journal even notes that even good economic news can't help the greenback now. Summer may be on its way, and Osama bin Laden may be dead, but that doesn't mean the sun is going to shine on the dollar. Ben Bernanke made sure of that. The Fed chairman's insistence last week that the U.S. ultra-loose monetary policy is here to stay not only indicated his lack of confidence in the recovery, but confirmed fears the U.S. Federal Reserve is falling behind the curve. As a result, not even good news will help the U.S. currency now. All this means that even good economic news will not save the dollar now as they... I skipped over the part where they go through the points that all around the world, the dollar is dead. The true test could come on Friday. That would be today, May 6th, with the latest unemployment numbers, data that traditionally should give the dollar direction. But if the Fed is saying no changes in sight, even strong non-farm payrolls won't stop the dollar from floundering. This whole good news is bad news theme was apparent as Osama bin Laden's assassination by U.S. forces in Pakistan broke. The initial euphoria that the Al-CIA leader is dead after a 10-year manhunt quickly turned sour as the risk of terrorist reprisals increased. If that's the case, deteriorating risk sentiment in global markets may give the dollar a little support on the one hand. But with interest rate differentials likely to continue moving against the dollar, chances are that the U.S. dollar will extend the decline it has pursued all year, pushing steadily to new lows against other majors such as the euro. Let's glance back to breaking news on the front of Google News right now, and we see... Women slow to join jobs recovery as the economy adds 244,000 jobs. U.S. private sector gives big jobs boost in April. And the trending topics are Osama bin Laden, Syria, and unemployment. There you have it. Let's get our other related econocrash updates posted as headlines below this story about... Even good economic news can't help the greenback now. AllGov.com asks the question, how did the U.S. go from prosperity to massive debt in just 10 years? It's an interesting bit to go through, but the caveat is just as the Steve Pachinik clip, and just as you heard Richard Grove note, that 90% of what he says is pretty accurate, but the 10% is substantial. That 10%, I would believe, is that at the end of that Steve Pachinik clip, you essentially hear him blaming it all on the puppets, as if Bush, Clinton, Bush, and Obama really call the shots. It's all them. Fixate on the front guys. That's the substantial 10%. So I would say that would also be the substantial part of this article from AllGov. How did the U.S. go from prosperity to massive debt in just 10 years? They, of course, blame the front men. But an important one from BlacklistedNews.com asking another question, what's the best place to live in the U.S. to prepare for coming economic collapse? And it breaks down certain sectors, and because I'm selfish like that, I'll just read the Pacific Northwest entry. Large numbers of freedom-loving Americans have been moving to the states of Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. You can also throw Eastern Oregon and Eastern Washington into this category as well. It gets cold up in the Northwest, but it's not as cold as the upper Midwest. There are lots of rivers, streams, and lakes, and in certain areas there's plenty of rain. The population density is very low in most areas, and there is an abundance of wildlife. Housing prices are reasonable, and in many areas you can grow your own food. The Northwest is one of the favorite areas of the United States for preppers. It's far from perfect, but it does have a lot of advantages. Now, of course, they're talking about Eastern Oregon, not the urban area that I currently reside in Portland. Furthermore, down the EconoCrash updates, NASDAQ and ICE okay a plan to launch a hostile takeover bid for the New York Stock Exchange. And that ICE is Intercontinental Exchange, not the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency that's shutting down web domains. I thought about playing the clip, but I'm not going to. You can just go to shtfplan.com for what to do when it hits the fan. And you can watch the clip of yourself of a secret, meaning I think it was a private event that wasn't supposed to be videoed, but of course someone had a phone and they captured the Donald saying to China, "Listen, you mother beep." Meanwhile, far more importantly, from civilrights.org, Supreme Court decision limits workers' and consumer rights in pursuit of claims against corporations. No more class action suits for you, plebs. And my man James Corbett gets into this on the most recent Sunday update over on youtube.com/Corbett Report. U.S. 10-year yields at a six-week low on post-Bin Laden concern. That's from Bloomberg. And so is this. U.S. jobless claims unexpectedly jump on auto shutdowns. And from one of the great mouthpieces to the elites, Financial Times, oil leads commodities price plunge. Meanwhile, the Justice Department sues Deutsche Bank for mortgage fraud. And the U.S. may pursue more lenders after suing Deutsche Bank on faulty mortgages. It's all connected, isn't it, my friends? Deutsche Bank brings us seemingly right back to the events of 9/11. But that story, even good economic news, can't help the greenback now, sets us up to take a little quick musical break for a little damn greenback dollar.
Some people say I'm a no-count, others say I'm no good, but I'm just a natural-born traveling man, doing what I think I should, oh yeah, doing what I think I should. And I don't give a damn about a greenback dollar, spend it fast as I can, or a wailing song and a good guitar. The only things that I understand, oh boy, the only things that I understand.
When I was a little baby, my mama said, hey son, travel where you will and grow to be a man, and sing what must be sung, poor boy,
sing what must be sung. And I don't give a damn about a greenback dollar, spend it fast as I can, for a wailing song and a good guitar. The only things that I understand, oh boy, the only things that I understand.
Now that I'm a grown man, I've traveled here and there. I've learned that a bottle of brandy and a song, the only ones who ever care, poor boy,
the only ones who ever care. And I don't give a damn about a greenback dollar, spend it fast as I can, for a wailing song and a good guitar. The only things that I understand, oh boy, the only things that I understand. Some people say I'm a no-count, others say I'm no good, but I'm just a natural-born traveling man, doing what I think I should, oh yeah, doing what I think I should. And I don't give a damn about a greenback dollar, spend it fast as I can, or a wailing song and a good guitar. The only things that I understand, oh boy, the only things that I understand. The only things that I understand, oh boy, the only things that I understand.
Greenback Dollar from the Kingston Trio from their 1962 album, The New Frontier. So that greenback dollar goes with our previous post on the Econo Crash, and that brings us to the 5-5 News Purge, Helplessness Blues. And we'll get to the blues at the end of this News Purge. We'll begin with a little bit of geopolitics. With Bin Laden death, Middle East stocks may rise. This from MarketWatch.com. Investors focus on risk and opportunity after the Arab Spring awakenings. It's crisitunity. Meanwhile, Syrian army braced for day of defiance. That's from Al Jazeera, and that concerns today, but doesn't seem to be anything going on. It doesn't rank the top of the news, or at least CBS News, I guess, is reporting as I just now punched it up. Gay blogger in Syria becomes heroine. France expels 14 Libyan officials as Sarkozy flexes his muscles to be strong. on the grand chessboard. That's from the New York Times. And our last geopolitical note comes from BorderlandBeat.com. Pancho Villa relative is Mexico's newest tough cop, which unfortunately means his time is probably very limited. But of course, we don't pay any attention to the complete and utter drug wars going on just below and now through our borders, because that's going to play into the formation of a North American Union after, of course, our shattered union. History mystery, one single note for you. Investigators find the black box from the Air France crash. And I had kind of forgotten about this story. It's now nearly 2 years old, going back to June of 2009, and we'll give you the flashback link. Air France Flight 447. Our first posting on this story was Little Hope Lost Lightning? And this really kind of hit me as I was finding the flashback link and look at this first initial post, and it is a massive one filled with tons of updates, and we followed this story quite closely. And I believe even folks like Alex Constantine got into the story, as of course the timeline never seemed to make sense. But that moves us to our media memes, as the mummified body of actress and former Playboy playmate Yvette Vickers was found in her Benedict Canyon, California home, perhaps being there as long as a year. Synchro, mystically enough, last night I threw on Martin Ritt's 1963 film HUD, which stars Paul Newman, which, in addition to having a really funny bit where a character offers him a Fig Newton, Yvette Vickers is in that film. Meanwhile, it's all obituaries all the time in the media memes. William Campbell, one of the first and best-known Star Trek Klingons, passed away at the age of 87, and Jackie Cooper, legendary Our Gang and Superman actor, passes away at the age of 88. Those last two stories come from HollywoodMemoir.com, and the mummified body of Playboy playmate Yvette Vickers, that comes from the Los Angeles Times. We have a few other related Obama-Saya updates that we didn't just add into the Obama-Psyop posting, because they kind of stand apart. But the Deutsche Press agency notes, and it's in their headline, Obama says, I've never seen devastation like this. And I say, yeah, and the tornado damage is pretty bad too. Obama toured tornado damage last Friday in Alabama after the storms that left 300 plus people dead across the most deadly week of weather wars in the country in many, many, many a decade. Classified documents on the rise despite Obama talk of transparency. Three convicted in terror-related cases later granted U.S. citizenship by the Obama administration. Outsider hired for Obama speechwriters or for Obama speeches at taxpayer expense. The teleprompter coach, you're paying for it. That's from the Washington Times. And a strange one from Raw Story, Raw Replay. Fox stages a fake debate between Ron Paul and an Obama impersonator. And this, unfortunately, has John Stossel being the ringmaster. And from what I gathered, it looks like Ron Paul playing along, which is kind of a stupid move. But he was already apparently in those debates that just happened. And I believe in our data dump concerning the Obama PSYOP, I think pretty much most of the candidates at this GOP debate said, show us some pictures of Bin Laden. But they're not gonna. And why should we suddenly expect them to be forthcoming with evidence concerning the false flag terror events of 9/11? They never have been before. They never gave any evidence that Osama had anything to do with it in the first place, even though the Taliban said, hey, if you show us any evidence, we'll pretty much give over Bin Laden to you. No. We were already set amassing our aircraft carriers because we were going to give them the carpet of bombs. Because the carpet of gold thing had already been, you know, that ship has sailed, so to speak. And it gets worse as we get into our Oregon oddities. Portland is back in the Joint Terrorism Task Force with some reservations.
Mayor Sam Adams first proposed revisiting Portland's role in the JTTF last winter. 30 drafts later, the policy has been examined by city attorneys, council staff, civil rights groups, the Justice Department, and the hundreds of Portlanders who attended several public meetings. The final language lays out a lengthy set of oversight rules. Even commissioners who expressed serious reservations at first, like Amanda Fritz, saw it as an appropriate compromise.
I think there's pieces of this that any one of us is not entirely comfortable with. But as a package and as a agreement, which is pretty historic, I think it moves us forward and it does make us safer.
More than one commissioner expressed resignation, saying since the FBI would be operating in the city, whether or not Portland officers cooperated, they hope the resolution system of civilian
oversight will let investigations proceed with transparency. In the end, the council vote was unanimous. That didn't sit well with the standing room only crowd that packed council chambers for the hearing. Shawnee Geegley Teller is a community organizer at Sisters of the Road. That's a nonprofit that works on hunger and housing issues as well as civil rights. She says increased contact with the FBI represents a step back for freedom of expression, saying, quote, "We understand that because we are resisting status quo, we will be targeted. But we also expect our local leaders to make it a challenge for the FBI and other enforcement systems. No police at daily briefings, no FBI monitoring our movements, and no JTTF in Portland." End quote. Outside City Hall, dozens of protesters dressed as cheerleaders shouted their message through megaphones. A key piece of language was written by Commissioner Randy Leonard. Last week, it looked as though the resolution might not pass over a provision that limited Portland officers to work on full-blown investigations. Leonard came up with this revision. Officers would only participate in investigations of suspected terrorism that have a criminal nexus. If that phrase is unfamiliar, Leonard says, it should be. I did that based on discussions with a number of parties and my belief that the council and future councils could define what that means for themselves and it not be a term of art the FBI uses. I intentionally looked for language that wasn't in the federal code or in the Attorney General's guidelines or the FBI's guidelines. The city has approved officers to work with the task force on a case-by-case basis with a yearly public report on all officers' activities. Let's hold our breath for that. Our other note of Oregon oddity, Oregon football's Kiko Alonso arrested and charged with burglary. But it doesn't matter because when you play for the Gladiators, you get a free pass. Don't worry about it, son. We did that when we were young. You got all the skills to make a damn good businessman. Hook 'em, boys. Jocko, Rama, save our souls. Sorry. Let's get our Police State International updates as pop star Rihanna, who you should know very well by her occult symbolism. Just go to VigilantCitizen.com and look up Rihanna. But the pop icon Rihanna was put through the naked body scanners in, of course, a naked show of power. To essentially show that no one's above this. Homeland Security and the police joining together as they do so well attack WIU students G20 style, some riot at a university, and perhaps throwing glass bottles and things isn't maybe the best way to have things go. And that could be why you'll even note that I believe the comments on that video basically says protests, perhaps, are a dead paradigm. I'm paraphrasing. Florida Senate sneaks RFID driver's license, internet ID into their transportation bill. More on that from 1787network.com. And our final note of police state updates originally was inside our Obsama PSYOPs, but I wanted to extract it out so we can play it here to give you the broad overlay.
Terrorism experts say a retaliation attack for Osama bin Laden's death is inevitable. Terrorists are expected to aim for more vulnerable soft targets like shopping malls, even museums. CBS 2's Hazel Sanchez reports.
They are places jam-packed with people, pedestrian malls, shopping centers, and stadiums.
Yeah, I feel safe, but of course, in the back of my head, I know that things can happen.
Counterterrorism expert Yuval Aviv says terrorists seeking revenge for Osama bin Laden's death will turn to attacks less dramatic than the destruction on September 11th, focusing instead on soft targets like hotels, places of worship, and mass transit hubs.
It's easier, less complicated for them to carry out. What they're going to achieve, if they're successful, is to kill as many people as possible.
Security consultant David Bohm says the future could include security checkpoints entering all soft targets, like your local department store. Bohm says even with the police presence, the areas are vulnerable.
The reason they're called soft is because it's so easily accessible to anyone. There has to be security checks for the safety of all people.
Added security is a turnoff for some New Yorkers.
There's a police presence, and they search someone with a backpack. Somebody who looks not really suspicious, but it's random. So I would go if that is the case. Not if everyone is being searched.
It's better to be safer than sorry.
Despite the challenges to secure high-volume soft targets like here in Times Square, security experts say one of the best lines of defense already exists and doesn't cost a thing.
We are millions and millions of eyes and ears. We need to assist each other and keep each other safe.
Freedom coming with an increasingly heavy price. In Midtown, Hazel Sanchez, CBS 2 News.
Soft target security is a long-standing practice in Israel, where people and their possessions are carefully examined in many public venues.
We can also, of course, again, just quote Simpsons with a little note on specious reasoning where, oh, I have this rock that keeps away tigers. I don't see any tigers around. It must be working. And, of course, comparing us to Israel, as, of course, we are intertwined in a death contract. But that's our last note of police state updates as we now turn to our War Horrors headlines. And there's only four, but we're also going to play Spot That Satire. First, Blackwater's new ethics chief, John Ashcroft. The consortium in charge of restructuring the world's most infamous private security firm just added a new chief in charge of keeping the company on the straight and narrow. Yes, John Ashcroft, the former U.S. Attorney General, is now an independent director of Z Services, formerly known as Blackwater. Our next note from War Horse, Predator drone court-martialed for Afghani civilian deaths.
All right, let's go now to the case the whole nation is watching, the military trial of MQ-1 military drone TR-425 for last September's tragic bombing of an Afghan wedding. After nearly a month of various testimony, the TR-425 itself will finally take the stand today to answer for the bombings which killed more than 300 Afghan civilians and stirred widespread outrage across the globe. Of course, we all remember that President Obama was quick to call for investigations after the incident, and within 3 hours, the Pentagon had charged TR-425 with single-handedly carrying out the attack.
These atrocities were the work of one drone acting alone. Now, evidence shows that there wasn't a single U.S. soldier within 100 miles of the targeted area when the bombing occurred. We're all as shocked as anyone that the drone would break protocol like this.
So far, military prosecutors have turned over significant evidence of the drone's history of violent behavior, and military psychiatrists have testified that the TR-425 has a personality disorder. The drone is yet to publicly claim innocence.
Do you have any response to the reports that you were murdered?
Why don't you apologize?
You don't sleep.
Okay, folks, that's all the time we have, right?
Christian!
Now let's return to the military trial of the MQ-1 Predator drone accused of killing hundreds in an unauthorized strike in Afghanistan. We have just obtained exclusive audio of TR-425 being cross-examined by the prosecuting attorney. Let's take a listen.
Do human lives mean anything to you? Is your circuitry so twisted that you somehow convinced yourself that you were helping your country? You actually seemed to relish the destruction of these innocent people. You even videotaped your actions. You're a disgrace to that flag painted on your fuselage. No further questions.
If his client is convicted, TR-425's attorney says he will appeal the decision based on the fact that there are zero mechanized Americans on the military tribunal. Okay, we have to take a quick break right now, but make sure to check out our website for more about the Department of Homeland Security's request that everyone hold their breath for the next 2 minutes. We'll be right back.
Oh, I just said we were going to hold our breath. As the Iraq drawdown continues, private contractors rush to fill that vacuum. Two more Merck firms get big Iraq contracts. Two more security firms have won contracts worth hundreds of millions of dollars to build the State Department a private army in Iraq. The department confirms that longtime Iraq contractor Triple Canopy and newcomer Global Strategies Group will continue to state's planned protection force of 5,500 contractors. And as we wrap up our war horrors and play Spot the Satire, Friendly Dragon added to U.S. arsenal.
It's the Onion Radio News. A friendly dragon is added to the U.S. arsenal. This is Doyle Redland reporting. The Pentagon has announced the addition of a friendly dragon to its growing list of formidable weaponry. Snargar, a 70-ton fire-breathing behemoth, much like the dragons described in ancient legends, is expected to be deployed this year in the Middle East. General Duff Bradley briefed reporters this morning.
Snargar has been secretly training at a government test site in Nevada for the past 6 months. He's been 100% effective at neutralizing ghost towns.
The general denied rumors that Snargar will be sent to Iran to destroy a suspected cache of demon eggs. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
Oh, God, I love it. Finally, on this 5-5 news purge, we reach West Virginia, worry. State officials fume as the Obama administration scrutinizes mining permits. Yes, of course, mining is the lifeblood and the destruction of my home state of West Virginia. Again, another death embrace. We have a video of another wrongful arrest in Parkersburg, West Virginia, and that is by way thanks to InjusticeEverywhere.com. And our final note of West Virginia worry isn't so much worrisome, at least not initially. Shepherdstown Battlefield to be studied by the National Park Service. That is interesting to me because that's where I spent 10 years, where I ran WSHC in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, my old college town before I moved to Portland, Oregon. And that brings to a close the 5-5 news purge named Helplessness Blues. And that, my friends, is the title track of the beautiful, beautiful new music from the band just north of me, from out of Seattle. They're on Sub Pop Records. They're called Fleet Foxes, and this is Helplessness Blues.
I was raised up believing I was somehow unique, like a snowflake, distinct among snowflakes, unique in each way you can see. And now after some thinking, I'd say I'd rather be a functioning cog in some great machinery, serving something beyond me. But I don't know what that will be. I'll get back to you someday. Soon you will see. What's my station? Oh, just tell me what I should do. I don't need to be kind to the armies of night that will do such injustice to you. Or bow down and be grateful and say, should take all that you see to the men who move only in dimly lit halls and determine my future for me. Often I barely can speak. Yeah, I'm tongue-tied and dizzy, and I can't keep it to myself. What good? to sing helplessness blues. Why should I wait for anyone else? And I know you will keep me on the shelf. I'll come back to you someday soon. If I had an orchard, I'd work till I'm old. If I had an orchard, I'd work till I'm sore. You would wait tables and
been through many times when I thought I might lose it. The only thing to save me has always been music. That's a Beastie Boys quote, but I think it kind of illustrates the way that song's kind of been for me over this last week. And I've made no secret about any of that throughout this entire thing, that I'm a music and film guy. And so I come back to those things as being some of my main inspirations and some of the things that can boost my spirit when times are tough. So even a melancholy lament like that is just shows you the beauty that is out there. And that's amazing, beautiful music from Fleet Foxes, the title track from their new record, Helplessness Blues. And that one actually goes into an instrumental called The Cascades, which are, of course, the mountain range here in the Pacific Northwest. I was going to begin the show with that tune, but I don't think it would have quite given the gusto. I think the Manic Street Preachers' I'm Just a Patsy tune was a much better kickoff. And we close the show with the Helplessness Blues. But our final note. In all the world of news, did you catch this one? From the Los Angeles Times. RFK assassin claims woman in polka dot dress controlled his mind. In a new court filing, the man who assassinated RFK in 1968 said he was controlled by a mystery woman at the time of the killing. In the papers, which were reviewed by the Associated Press, Sirhan Sirhan said he was led to the Ambassador Hotel with a gun by an unidentified woman in a polka dot dress. Last month, Sirhan's lawyer tried to convince a parole board that his client was a brainwashed hitman when he gunned down Senator Robert F. Kennedy at the Ambassador Hotel in L.A. in 1968. The board refused to release Sirhan, but the Times last month reported on handwritten notes purportedly from Sirhan, kept for 42 years by a Century City business executive that appeared to tell a different story. Michael McCowan was an investigator and the youngest member of Sirhan's defense team in 1969 when the accused assassin wrote on a legal notepad the narrative of his visit to a target practice range and his election night trip to the hotel. He wrote it right in front of me, said Cowan, now 78, McCowan. The lawyer currently representing Sirhan suggested he was manipulated and set up and did not act alone when Kennedy was shot. That would be the one and only William F. Pepper, who has, of course, also proven that the murder and assassination of MLK was an act of state. According to the new documents reviewed by the Associated Press, Sirhan said he didn't realize he was firing at Robert Kennedy. I thought that I was at the range more than I was actually shooting at any person, let alone Bobby Kennedy, he said, according to the documents. You can find videos of Sandy Serrano talking about the girl in the polka dot dress leaving the building saying, "We got him, we got him." You got who? We killed Bobby. And I don't really want to end it on a dark note like that, but I think it shows ultimately that there is some kind of disclosure going on, again, from inner space to outer space. My friends, we're just about out of time, but I so appreciate the fact that you guys tune in and that you may gain some kind of insight and enjoyment and enrichment from this show, because I know I do, and that's why I do it, and I love you guys, and we're going to have to get together to get through this. You know it. Keep an eye out this weekend for even more media blasting from the monarchy, even perhaps a mixtape for Mother's Day. But this has been episode 217 for May 6, 2011. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, as always, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.